Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Like so many other things these days, it seems the voice of nature is being heard again. To an ever-increasing degree, many Americans these days are saying, enough. This week, the courts ruled in favor of salmon, creating the hope, finally, that some reason may be brought to bear on the future of this magnificent species. In just a moment, we hear about the current decisions and the future of salmon when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wildside News. With a recent court ruling, the future of the salmon within the Columbia River watershed may find its impediments to its survival disappearing. We conclude our conversation with Charles Hudson of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. The salmon have been caught in the middle of this political battle. There has been quite a battle going on that has been fought in the courts, and recently there has been a decision by the Ninth Circuit Court that it takes a fairly strong stand to do some of the things that you're talking about, that say there are justifiable reasons to continue this process of restoration, which could include removal of dams and other considerations. There's been some very recent decisions on that. Why don't you bring us up to date on that?
The effort to save the salmon in the Pacific Northwest is no stranger to politics and lawsuits, and we have been in the thick of that, and we remain in the thick of that. There have recently been a series of quite stunning legal victories by the tribes and many parties in the conservation community against the United States government. The United States government, incidentally, has a responsibility to create a salmon restoration plan by virtue of the Endangered Species Act. And my apologies for not mentioning this earlier, but most of the fish, most of the salmon in the Columbia River have been listed as threatened or endangered species since 1991. And the first four listed fish in the Snake River in 1991, and then subsequently nine more different species since then. We're on to 16, 17 years of fish being identified as threatened or endangered. There has never been one day that a federal salmon plan has been legal in the eyes of the United States courts. There have been several plans put forth. All of them have been struck down as inadequate for various reasons, going back to 1995, later in 1999 and 2000, and most recently the 2004 salmon plan was declared illegal in 2005. That decision by Oregon District Court Judge James Redden was just upheld this week by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In very strong and no uncertain terms, did that court uphold James Redden's earlier ruling. The courts are showing increasing frustration and impatience with the United States government to do something effective, to do something meaningful for the salmon in the Columbia Basin. There have been a lot of false attempts. There have been several insincere efforts by both Democratic administrations and Republican administrations alike in crafting a sound and effective salmon plan. The courts are showing signs of being simply fed up with it. You couple these decisions over the last 3 and 4 years that we've won in the Columbia River with some of the decisions that are being won on the Missouri River that are favorable to species there that are also threatened and endangered, and we've now created a body of case law that looks quite favorable for species management in the United States, that the courts have simply looked at the scientific evidence and said, U.S. government, you are not doing enough. And that is where we are now, is trying to identify how, by providing good scientific data, by providing plans to the federal government so they can effectively get behind a meaningful and effective salmon recovery plan. This is not to say that we won't go through a few more years of the merry-go-round, but it appears now that the game is up, that we're approaching an end game where somehow the political will have to be mustered to make a good decision in the public interest to make sure that these species not only don't go extinct, but can begin to recover to levels so that they are not endangered or threatened.
Once these legal encumbrances have finally been dealt, well, never finally be dealt with, but once you've achieved some sort of critical mass and you can begin to truly develop the restoration plans that you feel are required, talk to us from your perspective what you expect to see, what you hope to have throughout the watershed.
Salmon management is often categorized in something called four H's, and that is habitat, hatcheries, harvest, and hydropower. We know that salmon harvest has been very well managed for about 30 years through several court cases, through several management realms, both the ocean harvest and the in-river harvest of Columbia Basin species is very well crafted, it's very well regulated, and very strictly enforced. We all know that while there is a little bit of harvest of all species, some for treaty harvest, it is essentially a minimal factor in salmon management now, or has minimal impact by design.
Because there's so few salmon to harvest.
Exactly. Yeah, and what salmon there are, the harvest rates are designed to have the most minimal impact. In many cases, there is zero harvest, and in fact, the tribes, their sacred fish, the spring Chinook, there was zero harvest from 1977 till 2001 on that species. What it says is that simply not fishing alone will not recover those fish. We found that out the hard way when many said, oh, tribes and sport fishermen and commercial fishermen, if you simply quit fishing, these fish will recover. Well, in some cases, as I said, the spring Chinook or the summer Chinook, where there was a fishing moratorium for about 40 years, the species simply didn't recover. Mm-hmm. And it was just evidence that the other factors causing their demise and decline needed to be addressed in a vigorous way.
Well, let's go through some of those. I think
I mentioned earlier mm-hmm. the massive habitat destruction. There is work being done with that. There is also very good habitat that remains in the Columbia Basin, particularly in Idaho. There is pristine, beautiful habitat, tributaries with timber and clear water just waiting for fish to repopulate those areas. But the fact is they can't get there. The dams, these four dams on the Snake River, four dams on the Columbia River, are preventing what fish may get up there. The juvenile fish, the baby fish going down, die in the hydro system on their journey out to river. I want to make that distinction very clear, that most of the fish that die in this system are killed as baby fish trying to move down the river. The adults, the few adults that do get up and spawn in the tributaries, a year later, their baby fish, about the size of an index finger, begin moving down the river. And they, at each dam, a percentage of them are killed. And by the time they pass eight dams, temperature, predators, the turbines have taken a considerable toll on that population.
And just to make it clear, these fish literally have to pass through those systems.
Yes, they do. And that is one of the things, one of the many things we're working on. One is to make a home for the fish in those tributaries, find a way to get them back up there as adults. The adults that do survive and go out to the ocean and come back are very resilient. They cannot quite successfully navigate the fish ladders and get back up to their tributaries. What we really need to work on is getting those baby fish down the river safely so they can get to the estuary and out to the ocean and have a chance to complete their life cycle. That is the critical phase, is getting from the tributary down through all of the dams and reservoirs behind the dams safely out to free-flowing water.
You mentioned hatcheries. That certainly is a part of this, and that I'm sure is primarily a matter of funding and will. If you create, let's say, lots of fingerlings, can you plant them in these tributaries, and will that restart the process?
That is one way. Yeah, that is one way of doing it, and that is actually one way strongly not only advocated by our tribes, but actually practiced by our tribes. A little history is each dam was conceived, proposed, and then built, there was an acknowledgement that this dam will hurt salmon. It will have an impact of some sort, of some degree, on the fish population. So there was typically a companion funding mechanism to build and maintain a hatchery, which was intended to mitigate for the effect of the hatchery. So, and hatcheries, by design, are not unlike maternity wards in hospitals, where historically any populations in the world, mortality was often highest at childbirth and then in the first few weeks and first year of life.
Mm-hmm.
A hospital, and one of the benefits of hospitals was to create a closely monitored and controlled environment that would reduce infant mortality through close monitoring, assistance in childbirth, and then in that very critical first few days and weeks and months of a life cycle. That's not unlike what a hatchery does. A hatchery intervenes in that portion of the life cycle from the egg to the smolt phase, and its intention is to reduce the natural mortality on those fish and to simply result in more smolts being alive at the end of that phase of life. Mm-hmm. So it's an artificial way, indeed, of intervening in the life cycle of a fish, but by increasing the survival to the smolt stage, you can, in theory, mitigate for the effects that dams have on other life stages of the fish. Now, that's kind of the principle that hatcheries operate under. The hatcheries, unfortunately, were used for reasons that were never respectful to the salmon themselves. They were simply used to create fish, often called just meat markets or meat hatcheries, to create a bunch of fish for fishermen to catch to be consumed. In the tribal view, as long as there are dams, we will probably need hatcheries to mitigate for effects of them, but they can be used in a way that's more in keeping with the genetic and physiological integrity of the species. We can preserve some of the genetics of any particular run of fish. We can blend those hatchery fish with some of the naturally spawning fish and try to help preserve and even enhance the population using hatcheries wisely.
Why is genetic mixing to keep a healthy population?
Any species or population has a genetic makeup. Its success is related to its genetic diversity. Its genetic diversity helps it withstand factors affecting it, from temperature to predators to its ability to adapt to landslide into the river and get through, its ability to avoid certain diseases that are, you know, natural diseases to fish, etc. As you start to lose fish, populations become smaller. That whole gene pool or the genetic diversity begins to diminish. Much of the genetic diversity of the fish in the Columbia River is contained in fish that are in hatcheries. We consider the fish in hatcheries to contain very valuable genetic diversity in some cases, in many cases, not all cases, because some fish have been so horribly mismanaged that they are essentially unfit to be used anymore for rebuilding. The tribes look at, in a very holistic way, all of these so-called H's, the hatcheries, the hydro power system, harvest, and habitat. And there are things we can do, indeed, in each of those. We believe most of the attention needs to be paid to the hydro system, because that is the single greatest cause of mortality and damage to these populations. Saving fish in the Columbia River is not insurmountable. It actually is achievable, but it's going to take some very well-defined, well-known steps. It's going to cost a bit of money. It won't break the bank, as many people who view salmon as a threat to livelihoods, to farmers, etc. It's not accurate. In fact, many farmers have seen the opportunities in reforming their farming practices to accessing new transportation systems. You know, many of their crops are barged on the Snake River. They know that with a little bit of adjustment to transportation systems, that they can get their crops as effectively to market by rail or by truck as they could by barge, sometimes quicker, sometimes cheaper. So we're looking for ways to help communities that might be affected by salmon improvements to not be adversely impacted. Where once the theory was mitigate for the fish, while we overhaul the river from a natural to an industrialized form, let's mitigate for the fish. Now we're thinking about it in reverse. Let's repair some of the damage and rethink some of these systems and mitigate for the people. Some of the original design, some of the original transformations of the river system have gone obsolete. Some of the original industries conceived simply don't exist anymore, yet we're left with the damage done and the relics, some of the dams that simply have outlived their purpose. So we're looking to identify those places where hydropower reforms need to take place, up to and including removal of some problematic dams. In some cases, it may mean structural modifications to dams to allow water to pass more quickly and effectively through them, and therefore fish. There's an undeniable connection between water, the abundance and free movement of water, and fish survival. That's one fact that just cannot be disputed, is that the more a river functions and acts as a natural flowing river, the better salmon fare in that river. And so we're among the hydro actions is to try to restore our rivers, even with the dams in place, into a system that shows signs of its original integrity of a free-flowing river. We can do that. We can do that. And where we have done that, there has been great success.
We're talking with Charles Hudson, who's the public affairs manager with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, and the CRITFC, which you can see at www.CRITFC.org, has some fairly well-specified guidelines and goals. As you look out into the future, what's your timeline and hope for revitalization of salmon?
Well, we are trying to rally the states of the Northwest and the federal government in the major, what are called the action agencies, the major river management agencies, around what we call the doubling goal. We've identified it, and that is within 25 years to double the amount of adult fish returning to the Columbia River. Now, that's not a new goal. It's a goal that was established back in the late 80s when roughly 2.5 million fish were coming back into the Columbia River, so doubling that, 5 million fish. And sad to say, since that goal was agreed upon in 1988, the number of fish returning has actually shrunk in half.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some work to do. Once the goal was established, there began an even farther backslide of the starting point. So we are continuing to press upon our fellow managers, the states and federal agencies, to work with us to achieve that original doubling goal, 4 to 5 million fish. That is roughly one quarter to one third of the original size of the Columbia River run. We think that that's a pragmatic and achievable goal. It's going to take some work. It's going to take some sacrifice, but we can do that.
Then two questions. The first question is, are there concerns that there's been a backsliding? Are there fears that this could continue?
Oh, absolutely. And that has been addressed quite bluntly by the recent court opinions. We have taken our arguments through litigation. It's one of the tools we use to attempt to get responsible actions and activities from federal agencies. The courts have been quite pointed in their criticism of federal salmon plans, that they are not using the data wisely, that they're crafting salmon plans that aren't expected. attempting to rewrite the Endangered Species Act is to simply absolve themselves of responsibility to do anything, as was the most recent case. That prompted recent pointed rebuke from the Ninth Circuit Court, calling the federal salmon plan, quote, sleight of hand, unquote.
Well, I thought that was a rather unique interpretation, which I'm sure you can define better than I can, the fact that the dams are already in place, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Well, the Bush administration has had one major chance to rewrite the salmon plan, but by virtue of a court decision, they're taking their second chance at it. But in the first opportunity to craft salmon policy, instead of approaching the problems presented by the hydro system that are well known and well documented in scientific literature, they simply sought to say the dams are part of the natural landscape or part of what's called the environmental baseline, which to the tribes was one of the coldest slaps in the face we could have imagined. To simply tell the tribal people with treaty rights to salmon who've sacrificed so greatly for so long in this country that they should expect to simply see a species go extinct because now these massive blockades in their rivers are simply part of the natural landscape as if they were left there by the receding glaciers.
Well, because they were there when the law was written.
Right. It's preposterous. It was an attempt by the administration and probably written by some in industry colleagues that the dams are suddenly sacrosanct. They're untouchable, immovable objects and simply must be considered part of the landscape as a waterfall or a tree or a rock or a whirlpool. It's ludicrous, and it was seen as such by the courts. Immediately and without ambiguity have the courts said this is preposterous, this is contrary to the law, the Endangered Species Act law, as put to the country by Congress back in the 70s.
Well, Charles Hudson, I'm sure everybody realizes at this point that this is a very complex and amazing story. I wish you great success at this point because there has been this little turn in the road here that may lead to a reversal of some of these trends. Why don't you invite people to your website once more so that
Absolutely.
They can find out more about this. And by the way, it's a beautifully done website.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, please visit us at www.CRITFC.org, and that is the acronym for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. We are four tribes on the Columbia River residing in the states of Idaho, Oregon, and Washington with treaty fishing rights to the Columbia River. We're trying very hard to keep this amazing species viable here. We're reaching out to anybody and everybody we can to help us in this fight. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of public will. It's going to take a lot of public participation. It always has, but calls to governors, calls to your local political representative, to your senator's office, and let them know that the ongoing tragedy on the Columbia River is one that's needless, that it simply has become so complicated by design. There are those that want to make this seem impossible to achieve, and in so doing, the public will simply lose interest in it. But they're failing. The salmon remain an icon in the Northwest. The salmon continue to have the most devout of following from school children, and that commitment continues to grow every year of people who simply refuse to see fish end up as museum pieces. They want that quality of life that we hear so much about, that all communities are seeking, is clean water. They want their species to be viable. They want their species to not be disappearing. They don't want to have to go to a museum to simply see what used to be in their midst.
Well, Charles Hudson, a lot of people talk about the effectiveness of the oral tradition, and I think this has been a prime example of exactly that. I want to thank you so much for giving us such a beautiful, far-reaching, visionary perspective on this, the state-of-the-art of the salmon in the Columbia River. Charles, thanks so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Well, thank you, Sydney. It's been a pleasure. And again, I look forward to working with you again, and the best to all your listeners.
Changing the course of history has always been an upstream battle. But like the salmon itself, all of the struggles are what life itself is made of. We wish the great salmon and all its people a time when peace again will reign between humans and the great spirit that enkindles our will. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until next Thursday or any time on the archives when your voice of the earth will call out around the world here on the Wild Side News.